Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Lots to cover. How to live a longer life. What does meditation accomplish? We'll show you that. Some good stuff. The great health benefits of elderberry. I remember my great aunt used elderberry and with great success. Well, it's back and we should be using it on a regular basis. I'll explain why. Also, there's several forms of vitamin E to protect against memory disorders. I'll tell you which those are. We have a lot on health and healing. Then from our public health segment, an in-depth report on are smart meters part of our larger corporate scam? You bet. Global Research, Del So Josh, an in-depth report. So for you who've been asking, when would I do an in-depth report on smart meters? Because they're a total fraud at every level. You should fight back. You're not legally required to have them on your house, no matter what they say. You'll get all the details today on that. Then, from Jim Hightower, the dangerous militarization of our local police forces. A short commentary. I did a full hour on this with two brilliant professors this past Monday night at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Commentary Hour. For those of you who missed that show, you should download it and listen to that full hour on the militarization of the police. Then they manipulated hundreds of trillions of dollars, and they paid a $600 million fine. How about that? But more about what else they're manipulating. Also, from John Pilger, would as many as a million people be alive today if the media had done its job right? You decide. I'll share the insights. As you see, we have a lot to cover, and then we have our guest. My guest today is Dar Jamel. He has become one of the most renowned investigative journalists for documenting the human cost of the Iraq conflict and the growing misery in the lives of Iraqi citizens. He's been a journalist for Al Jazeera's Human Rights Department and is currently the Al Jazeera's online news producer in Qatar. We'll be talking to him in Doha later today. He frequently writes for The Nation magazine, The Guardian, Foreign Policy and Focus, La Mode, etc. Today, are we falling off the climate precipice? How much time is left for humanity? We have a lot to share. Let's begin. Most of us realize that we must set time aside each day for just being with ourselves. Quiet time. A lot of us do it when we exercise. I'm in the midst of training now and up to 2 hours a day of road work on my way to where I'll be doing in time, about 6 hours, for the World Games that I'll be competing in or trying to qualify to compete in about a year and a half from now. In those long miles, you think about the issues in your lives. I also like to write at that time. I can focus thoughts. A lot of people do the same. Most of the athletes I speak with do the same. But other people, they prefer sitting someplace and relaxing their thoughts and just being present, especially if you're around nature. We all find ways of meditating. I call it a living meditation. You don't have to sit in a lotus position, put your thumb and forefinger together and do an om. Here is the latest from Johns Hopkins University, published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. They looked at 47 different clinical trials with thousands of participants, and they found that there was evidence of quality in the medical literature to suggest that mindfulness meditation programs resulted in improvements in anxiety and depression and pain. So that's important. Quote, our review indicates that meditation programs can reduce the negative dimensions of psychological stress. Mindfulness meditation programs, in particular, show small improvements in anxiety, depression, and pain, and better results focusing on present rather than on a mantra. So what does that mean? Well, some historically we thought of meditation as just thinking of a word or hearing a certain sound over and over and over again. But no, mindfulness is where you're fully present. You're conscious of yourself and your environment, but you're also staying neutral. You're just trying to observe what it is, as if you were a leaf on a tree looking at everything around you. Simply, there it is. And in that moment of complete surrender to your environment, you become connected to it and you become aware of it. Now, why is that important? Because how many times in a day do you forget something? Where did I just put my pen? I know I put my key somewhere. Did I turn off the lights? We forget. All nuts. I forgot to get all the things I went to the store for. Even when we have lists, we don't always pay attention to it. Our mind is constantly jumping all over the place. It's being distracted. So when you're mindful of being present. You're mindful of what you're saying. If you're eating, you're mindful of eating. If you're reading, you don't have the radio on or television or music, you're just reading. So that's mindfulness. And now good study showing it really does benefit us. And there's no one way of doing it. Just being present. There's a great deal of research showing that elderberries are good for us. Now, we've known in North America, Europe, Western Asia, and Africa that they have used elderberries for thousands of years. In fact, in the Middle Ages, it was considered a holy tree due to its ability to improve health and longevity. What is it about the elderberry that makes it so special? Well, first, its color. It has that deep purplish blue, and that means it's rich in polyphenols. And it's particularly rich in the anthocyanins. Antho, A-N-T-H-O, Cy, C-Y, Anin, A-N-I-N, anthocyanin. Now, that's what gives the dark color. And then that's rich in antioxidants. And that's true of almost all your dark-colored berries, whether the dark color is a cherry or a blueberry, or even in an orange. And what happens is the dark color allows the fruit to survive intense ultraviolet light radiation from the sun. So the protection that those anthocyanins provide to the plant, we benefit from when we consume them. No different than in every garden I do. I'm always planting around the exterior of the garden onions, shallots, garlic, because to protect themselves, they emit chemicals and acids that are volatile to an insect. They don't want to touch that. Well, good. Then they're not going to touch the things that they would enjoy gorging on, like the Boston leaf lettuce or something else inside. The bitters are particularly good because the bitters protect the plant itself. But then when you eat that, you're getting the benefit of that sulfur and all those oils in your body. Kills bacteria, viruses, parasites. But also the elderberry has high ORAC. Now, many of you know about ORAC because you're taking fruit or vegetable supplement powders that have 10, 15,000 ORAC, very high. ORAC means it has oxygen for O, radical for R, absorbance for A, capacity for C, ORAC, oxygen, radical, absorbent, capacity. And there's a score. And so you have twice as much ORAC in elderberry as in blueberries and cranberries, which are also superstars. You also have more vitamin C in elderberries than in an orange. And it also supports your brain health, improves your immune coordination, protects your blood vessels, reduces cancer, and so also has antiviral properties. I work with a lot of people who have viral conditions, from AIDS-defining illnesses to hepatitis to herpes, cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr virus, Coxsackie virus, adenovirus. And elderberry concentrate is on every one of their protocols 3 times a day because it works. There's a German series of studies that show that the anthocyanins increase your immune power, and therefore that boosts cytokines. Cyto, C-Y-T-O, kinds, K-I-N-E-S. Now, cytokines are very, very important messengers in the immune system to help regulate how quickly and to what degree your immune system can respond to a foreign agent and neutralize it. That then becomes a primary defense against disease. So these studies show that the elderberry, to be greater in vitamin E and vitamin C than others, and hence better for your immune system. And it also helps your sinuses, your mucous membranes, so it produces better circulation. If you want to have a healthier heart, less likelihood of having a stroke, then have your elderberry every day. Otherwise, most Americans will never look at an elderberry, never see a bottle of it, and you can get it as a concentrate, and it's delicious, and you should have it every day. Now, something else that's an easy place for most people to start their health regimen is with a Mediterranean-style diet. Now, when you talk about the Mediterranean, you're talking about a lot of countries from the north end, northeast section of Africa, and up past Italy, on the backside of Italy, on the east side, you've got your old European countries. On the western side of Italy, you've got your, what is thought of as your more Mediterranean countries, and like Greece, Spain. Well, there's a diet there. And the diet is rich in living foods. It's a clean diet. Lots of fruits and vegetables. I've been all over the Mediterranean. In my travels, in fact, I'll be traveling again in about 2 months. I have to visit 7 countries in Europe. And I may invite some of the people in the audience to see how I film documentaries in countries. It's for a particular documentary that I'm doing. And I generally go in, this time I'm going into a country for about 3 days in each country because I have a lot of people to film. But I also always take time to go to the country, to go to the mountains, to go to the suburban area and the urban area, and then talk with people about their life, their diet, their exercise, their stress, their longevity, their fears. You get a real good handle when you're able to talk with 100, 200 people in a day, and you do this every day for a week. You get some pretty good feedback, especially when you can go to the country, because they're far more relaxed, they're more open, they're not rushing, and they're very kind. And they talk to you, and you see that those people in the Mediterranean areas, they have a slow pace of life. And I've watched them go out each day and pick the wild greens, sorrel, which is a delicious green, a little stemmy. But if you get it when it's really fresh, it's not pithy. It's kind of, tastes like cucumber if you've left the skin on. And they put it in salads. Well, the sheep eat it, and their idea is anything that makes the sheep healthier and the goats healthier must be good for us. Not always true, because they can eat anything. Goats can eat anything, and the people cannot, but they know what to eat. They're masters of which mushrooms to select. They have a lot of mushrooms, lots of olives in their diet. When available, they have fresh fish, and they'll go that day. And they don't go late in the day. They go early. They're generally down there at 6 o'clock. When the boats come in, the small boats, they want to buy from the a fish salesperson. They'll open up a, depends upon the size of the boat, but they'll open up these large containers and about a 55-gallon drum and outpour the fish, and then they select their fish. Restaurants are there to do the same thing because they want the fish fresh. That's the Mediterranean diet. Then they take their time eating it. They eat a lot of beans, all kinds of beans. And you can always see beans soaking that they're going to use the next day. When you soak a bean overnight and use some apple cider vinegar in it, and you cook it properly, you don't get the gas. If you just don't do that, you do. They'll have a dozen different types of olive oil and then whole grains. So that's now showing, according to the American Diabetic Association and published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, you're less likely to develop diabetes, adult diabetes, if you have a Mediterranean-style diet. It's not a perfect diet, but boy, when you're talking about the average person eats 30 grams of mixed nuts every day, wow. We don't eat 30 grams a week in the United States unless it's a deep-fried and salted and trans fat and table salt peanuts. There, they're eating mixed nuts all the time because they have nut orchards everywhere. And 30 grams is only a little over an ounce, not a lot. And a lot of people eat more, but that's the average. So that means they're getting the good minerals and the good oils. Just some suggestions what we could be doing also. Now there's a look at vitamin E. Everybody wants to have a healthier memory, but many of the things we do prevent that. Recently, I was approached by a person where I was in a bookstore. I'm supposed to be doing a book signing, and I just wanted to go in and see how the store was set up and where my book was. It's going to be a lecture. I'm doing a lot of lecturing now and combining whenever I'm in a town. I let my publishers know I'm going to be filming there. Can you arrange for a book signing? Okay. And I currently have 4 different bestsellers, so doing a lot to talk with people about their health. And one of my more important books right now is about the brain. So over comes this guy, and he says, "Hey, Gary." He said, "I'm going to be at your lecture later." I said, "Good." And he said, "But I have a question for you. I read in some magazine that here are all these people that we all have known, Nimoy from Star Trek, and Bob Conrad, and he rattled off a whole bunch of people, Michael Caine, and they're all older now, and most of them are sick. Do you think you could do anything to help them?" I said, "Sure, you can help them. I don't mention the names of the famous people that I counsel. I believe that's breaking a trust, and anytime someone counsels me, it's unless they publicly say, 'Hey, yeah,' and a few have. You know, Susan Sarandon, some people say, 'Yeah, I'm healthy because I'm on Gary's protocols,' but most of the time people don't mention it, and I never bring it up. But a very famous American actress, Celeste Holmes, I counseled 25 years ago. She lived to be about 95 years of age. So she was as old as some of these people he was mentioning, and she did it right. She made all kinds of changes. Now, how many years was that able to add on to her life in a healthy way? Can't say for sure, but I know that I've seen the results when people have arthritis and swelling of the hands, and they have inflammation, and they have bloated faces, and their skin is sagging, their muscle mass is diminished, their memory is going, but they try to hide all this from the public because they don't want to see themselves deteriorate. And I understand that. But how often are people willing to make full, complete changes? Because the reason they frequently look as bad as they do and feel as aged and decrepit as they do and are approaching death quickly is because of all the choices they've made leading up to this moment. So if you're willing to give up all the pro-inflammatory things in your life and engage in healing and make that full-time every day, we could see a Michael Caine completely change his whole body. His hair would grow back. His face would become youngish again. His muscle mass would return. His energy would return. But that would mean he would have to give up those things that he treasures, you know, his drinking and his eating certain foods that are not healthy. And others don't want to give up smoking, and others don't want to give up their sedentary lifestyle. I said to this gentleman, I said, yes, almost everyone can improve the quality of their life no matter what their age. But they have to want to, and they have to do it completely. You can't just take a vitamin. You can't just eat, you know, a particular food and see a lifetime of accumulated DNA damage be reversed. It won't happen. But if you do it the right way, you bet you can change it. So that's just one of the things that I hope people take to heart. It's how complete are the changes that you're making, not tokenism. You know, being in a stressful, toxic job and taking some passion flower is not the answer. Get out of the toxic job. Living a negative karma and do a token good thing on the weekends, that's not going to change the negative consequences of everything you're doing. Only do good. That's how you reverse that. This study shows just one aspect of this. This was done at the Karolinska Institute in Sweden and also the Finnish National Institute for Health and Welfare at the University of East Finland. It shows that elderly people with high vitamin E levels are less likely to suffer from memory disorders than their peers with low levels. Now, there are a lot of studies showing that alpha-tocopherol is good, but there are more studies showing that mixed tocopherols are better. So just the idea of being able to be conscious enough that every day you're going to take your vitamins, all of them, not just one, and your superfoods, and you're going to exercise, the more that you do, the more discipline you bring into your life each day, the longer, healthier life you're going to live. I'm Gary Nall, and we have a lot to share today. Now to our public health issue, and that is smart meters. I've gotten a lot of people who want to know about this, and I'm going to read verbatim from Global Research's article entitled Power Takeover. Are smart meters part of the largest corporate scam in history? Author is Del Sol Josh. It'll be posted along with about 70 other important progressive-themed articles read by millions of people on the Progressive Radio Network website. And by the way, this year I'm intending to publish about 30 major original investigative reporting articles. On January 17, 2008, President Barack Obama, quote, famously said, under my plan of a cap-and-trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket, end quote. It's now clear the so-called smart utility meter is the core culprit technology in the scheme in which Obama was referring. But this is just the tip of the rather alarming iceberg unveiled in our new feature film, Take Back Your Power. By the way, you can go up on Amazon or Google and type in takebackyourpower.net, and you can see the trailer. Billions of tax dollars, zero benefits. Quote, in a time of economic crisis, the U.S. government allocated $11 billion from taxpayer funds from the bailout package to develop a smart grid, including smart meters for every home's electricity, gas, and water. And recently, the European Union has announced plans to spend a mind-numbing $700 billion on building out this centralized control grid. The stated reasons for smart metering and grid technology are to increase power, reliability, and to give you more control of energy use in your own home. It's now easily demonstrated that all three of these claims are patently false. Smart meters and grids typically use more energy. They are extremely hackable, making the entire power grid vulnerable. And customers suffer increased utility bills virtually across the board immediately following a smart meter installation, a fact even openly acknowledged now by the same utilities. In the words of Dr. Timothy Schokel, a leading digital technology engineer and author of Getting Smarter About the Smart Grid, quote, "The smart meter is a canard, a story or a hoax based on specious and grandiose claims about energy benefits ostensibly derived from the promise of two-way communications with the customer. There's essentially no possibility that smart meters or meter networks will lead to greater sustainability," end quote. Now, as if all this is not enough, smart meters in combination with smart appliances are chronically transmitting low-level microwave radiation and are functionally designed to collect swaths of in-home privacy data on everyone. Now, that's according to the U.S. Congressional Research Service report. Quote, this is from the U.S. government. Police will have access to data that might be used to track residents' daily lives and routines while in their homes, including their eating, sleeping, and showering habits, what appliances they use and when, and whether they prefer the television to a treadmill, among a host of other details, end quote. That was the U.S. government's Congressional Research Report entitled Smart Meter Data, Privacy, and Cybersecurity. But it gets worse. Utilities and public utilities commissions, such as the California Public Utility Commission, are actually encouraging the sale of this private data, everything you do in your home, to third-party corporate interests for profit. Quote, I support today's decision because it adopts reasonable privacy and security rules and expands consumer and third-party access to electricity usage and pricing information. I hope this decision stimulates market interest in the data, end quote. And that was from Timothy Allen Simon, who's the commissioner of that California Public Utility Commission. And increasingly, even former CIA Director David Petraeus boasted in Wired that government will be routinely spying on you through smart appliances. Thus, with the focus on legalization of private data transfer deals for corporations to government agencies, the primary motivation behind the push for such legislation starts to become clear. And not only would every detail of your life be tracked, but your access to electricity would be totally controlled. Your appliances, your entire home, could be shut down at any time without notice by any utility or government agency. As another former CIA director, James Woolsey, stated, quote, a hacker on a cell phone in China, end quote. Newsflash, the National Security Agency phone spying scandal is just the tip of the global iceberg. The good news, the smart plan of control and order out of chaos cannot be achieved if enough people simply refuse to participate in this federally sponsored voluntary microwave surveillance program. Now, tens of thousands of individuals are reporting officially to government and utilities that they are experiencing illnesses or functional impairments following the installation of smart meters. Reported symptoms including headaches, sleep problems, ear ringing, focus difficulties, fatigue, heart palpitations, nausea, and statistically abnormal reoccurrences of cancer. According to court-ordered documentation and independent testing, utilities have been proven to be lying about how often smart meter transmit bursts of microwave radiation. Depending upon the utility, they claim there is typically something like a 4 to 6 times per day or 45 to 60 seconds per day, whereas courts and independent testing reveal that meters are transmitting in the range of 190,000 pulse microwave transmissions per day. That's 190,000. The amount of transmitted microwave radiation has been measured up to 200 times greater if one is standing next to the meter than the building biology standard threshold for extreme concern. The radiation standards set by the national agencies, such as the FCC, are literally thousands of times higher than science-based levels because they actually assume that harm can only be done from electromagnetic radiation if cells heat up by a certain amount. This is called the thermal effect. The reality is that more than 6,000 peer-reviewed published studies have indicated functional impairment symptoms of illness or disease, meaning non-thermal effects from levels of electromagnetic radiation as much as 10,000 times lower than safety standards set by organizations such as the FCC and Health Canada. But the health effects don't end with the pulse microwave radiation from the meters and all future smart transmitting appliances. Under this multinational plan of total control, every smart digital electric meter has what's known as a switching mode power supply, which is proven to directly create large amounts of direct dirty electricity or high-frequency energy radiation throughout your home's electric circuits, essentially creating an antenna cage. The levels of the electricity caused by smart meters can be several hundred times higher than some international safety standards. And when confronted, one government agent would not talk about this on his work phone, but on a private call, he confirmed the awareness and concern of the dirty electricity health hazard. As stated by Dr. D. Kun Lai, a respected Kaiser Permanente scientist who I interviewed, quote, "I'm not aware of any studies that have shown that exposure to smart meters is safe for human populations," end quote. Now, in this complete void of responsibility or conscience, independent research is now starting to clearly show negative biological effects. One such example is demonstrated in the film, the effects of a single smart meter on live human blood, and the visual results are staggering, to say the least. Additionally, by many reports, there are now well over 1,000 home fires linked to smart meters, and tens of thousands have experienced other appliance breakages in their homes. Incredulously, almost none of these meters, made mostly in China, have been tested or proved by underwriters' laboratories or an equivalent standard body. Thus, the homeowner has no guarantee of coverage and is often left to deal with the damage and expense to repair. This is the first time in known history that either governments or corporations are attempting to force a device on entire populations which has been openly proven to cause direct harm to health, rights, and security, and property. In the United States, where a federal bill introduced in July 2013 would, if passed, eliminate local decision-making and mandate smart grid developments nationwide, this agenda rips apart the 4th, 5th, and 10th constitutional amendments. Mandated or not, the installation of smart meters is either underway or planned in virtually all Western countries, despite existing foundational laws which have hitherto served as protections from people from tyranny. By forcing this centralized control grid while ignoring an avalanche of evidence indicating catastrophic downsides, and all the while completely ignoring democratic processes, the picture is becoming clear that the corrupted establishment is trying everything it can to have more control over our lives. So it is best to take an honest look at all this. By the way, there is no legal requirement. According to some legal experts we interviewed, the trick is to realize that this is a poker game. There is no law requiring you to accept a so-called smart meter on your home or to participate in extortion, even though utilities and governments are intimidating people into believing they have no choice. And for the masses who do not yet know the facts about this shocking issue, corporate utilities operate under tacit acceptance or implied consent. In other words, if you didn't say no, you just said yes. Lawsuits and claim of right actions against installations are sprouting up and becoming almost ubiquitous. And many local governments that are still not listening to the people, individual councillors and mayors, are now beginning to be on the receiving end of civil and criminal litigation. So sue the utilities, sue your city council, sue everyone, sue all these low-life degenerate bastards. That's my suggestion. Three things you learn in this world today if you have an IQ above 7. Trust no one in government, believe nothing they say, and never believe the media that acts as its mouthpiece. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a break. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you, I'm Gary Noll. Joining us now from Doha, Qatar, is my guest, Dar Jamel. As I mentioned earlier in the program, he has become a world-renowned investigative journalist for documenting the human cost of the Iraq and war and growing misery in the lives of Iraqi citizens. He has been a journalist for Al Jazeera's Human Rights Department and is currently the Al Jazeera's online news producer based in Qatar. His reports and stories are published monthly frequently in The Nation, and The Guardian, Foreign Policy and Focus, Le Monde, Tom Dispatch, and other progressive news outlets. He's received many awards for his journalism, including 4 Project Censored awards. And his latest book is Will to Resist, Soldiers Who Refuse to Fight in Iraq, as well as Beyond the Green Zone, Dispatches from Embedded Journalist in Iraq and Occupied Iraq. Nice to have you with us today. Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, hi, Gary. Thank you. It's good to be with you.
We're going to talk about something a little different. We're going to talk about, are we falling off the climate precipice and how much time we have left, especially for those who are paying attention. As you've seen, I'm sure, there have those voices come forth now to say, what global warming? What global warming? We just went through an Arctic vortex and people are cold and we've broken records. And I try to explain to this audience that who is aware of the problem, that global warming causes such extremes, extreme cold, extreme drought, extreme rain, extreme hurricanes. And the fact that we're going through an extreme cold cycle doesn't negate global warming. So here is what I'd like you to focus your attention on, if you would, please. I'd like to begin with an issue you've raised in a couple of your essays last year that I read. It's the issue regarding the future of younger generations in the context of the more dire predictions of global warming's impact upon our resources necessary for living a sustainable life and how much of the Earth will be habitable. And as you stated, in the past, it was common for parents to ask children what they want to be when they grow up. However, for those who follow and comprehend climate and change and have the imagination to project a vision of what the Earth might be like, let's say 30 years from now, the question regarding the children's dreams of a fulfilling future in a job of their choosing becomes irrelevant. Rather, the question we should be asking ourselves regarding our children and ourselves, if we're healthy and going to live a longer life, are we prepared for any dramatic changes ahead? Are there any cities prepared? Is anyone doing anything that will help them not only survive but thrive? Let's begin there.
Well, I'm really, it's a great place to start, and you know, obviously it's cutting right to the core of what's happening here. And, you know, this recent essay that I wrote for Tom Englehart's website, tomdispatch.com, is really based heavily on a conversation that I had with Guy McPherson, who I know has also been on your show, and an incredibly important scientist, professor emeritus at University of Arizona, and through that conversation, he tipped me off to several other sources, and then this turned into this article, which I did my best to really line out in a very clear, scientific way, citing the most credible sources I could find, like the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, several reports published there, NASA reports, publications in Nature, in Geoscience, and, you know, the most prestigious scientific outlets that we have out there and the most respected, and all of them are really pointing towards the same thing, and that is that there is ample evidence of what is happening right now regarding the summer ice in the Arctic melting, that estimates range from it being we're going to have an ice-free Arctic within 2 to probably 3 to 4 years maximum from now, and then what that will mean with massive disruptions in global climate and in the jet stream, where what we have happening even now with the Arctic vortex that you guys are in as we speak, that, you know, that becoming possibly a commonplace occurrence and things like this nature. This leading then, of course, to ongoing escalations of runaway positive feedback loops of the methane being released in the permafrost up in the Arctic, where there's just massive amounts of carbon stored there. In fact, 3 to 4 times as much as what's already been released by all of industrial civilization since the mid-1800s. And then what happens when that gets released is we see massive escalations and ramping up of global temperature increases. And then what that will cause is basically what I found out is, you know, if we're talking about, you know, we hear these estimates ranging from a 2°C increase by the end of this century to the most recent predictions, even from the International Energy Agency, which is a very conservative agency. They predicted just this past November a 3.5°C increase in all global temperatures by the year 2035. And we keep seeing an escalation and updating of these increases, higher increases coming sooner. Every prediction is showing that, and I outline that in the article of just a 6-year period of just one dramatic increasing escalation of both temperature increase and the rapidity of which it's happening with each consequent prediction. And what this means is, you know, you and me can walk outside the door and handle a 3.5-degree increase in temperature or even a 10°C increase in temperature. But the problem happens with food production is that agriculture is going to suffer dramatically with those kinds of increases and just basically can't keep up. In fact, there's been a recent report published in Ecology Letters that showed that there is the rate of evolution trails the rate of climate change by a factor of 10,000. So, you know, we're talking a dramatic, just 1 to 2 to 2 to decade increases of a 2 to 3°C is going to dramatically alter agriculture, which means we're not going to be able to feed people. And that means if we're looking at some of these dire predictions that have been made recently, like the one I just cited from the International Energy Agency or a UN Environment Program prediction made in December of 2010 that predicts up to a 5°C global increase by 2050, and there's numerous others I list in the article, well, we're basically looking at an immediate inability for us to feed the 7 billion and counting members of the planet as these increase. And so we're talking about in less than a generation from now, we're going to see this. And in fact, I would argue that we're already seeing it. We look at the chronic drought now that is evident in the breadbasket of the Central Valley of California, as well as the Midwestern United States, as well as many other places around the world. We're already basically seeing, hey, this is what it's going to look like, and this is only going to increase.
I appreciate the overview. Thank you for that. You're in a part of the world, in the Middle East, that is quite simply not sustainable. There's no country I can look at, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, Israel, certainly, Saudi Arabia, Oman. You look at all these countries, they all have three primary problems. One, they do not have the natural resources. Two, they're running out of water, and water is going to be a major concern. And global warming is making what was hot and dry hotter and drier. And so even you look at one of the most famous, beautiful cities in the world, architecturally, it is one of the gems of the universe, and yet it was built at sea level and built without understanding, will this be sustainable? Now I have a friend who lived there who said, all the buildings are cracked and the homes, the multi-million-dollar homes, everything's breaking because the sea is rising. So hubris, arrogance, and greed by engineers and architects in different countries and giving what the royal princes wanted. They wanted the most beautiful city. Well, they got it, and the tallest building in the world. But it's not sustainable. They have thousands of trucks have to carry away their human excrement from buildings every day because they don't have a septic and sewer system to properly dispose of all this stuff. The weakness is in all of this. So on the one hand, with oil wealth and other wealth, you have massive growth in the standard of living. And at the same time, living on the principle that everything is infinite when it is not. Look at China, the greatest growth in the world in the last 20 years. But look at what the quality of life is like in China. It's the fastest desertification country in the world. One-fifth of all of China is now desert. They have only 12% of their rivers that can they even take water out of and even purify that water, because all the other water in the country is so polluted they can't even use it after processing it. India is the same way. So on the one hand, we look at their prosperity, we look at all their technology and their brilliance. True. But then we don't look at all the consequences, and unintended and otherwise, that come from this. So when you stop and look around the world you're a part of, immediate surroundings, the Middle East, and then you look at other parts of the world, and none of these people seem to be clued in on the fact that they live in such a vulnerable and susceptible environment, and what it's going to be like 10 years from now. Your thoughts, please.
I am speaking to you from the city of Doha, Qatar, which I would confidently argue that is probably the most extreme example of everything you just said. All good, extremely important, relevant points for sure, especially talking about Dubai. But even worse than Dubai is Doha, Qatar, where, you know, it's the highest per capita income on the planet, one of the richest countries in the world per capita on the planet, one of the fastest growing economies in the world. And I walk around here and I watch what's going on and I feel like I am living in the Matrix, where unbridled growth, all based on their oil and gas reserves, which at current outputs are projected to last another 40 to 45 years. Let me give you an example of this. You know, Doha, the city of Doha, which is basically the entire population of a country, save a few hundred thousand people who live on the outskirts or in a couple of other smaller towns. The entire city of Doha, 99% of its water comes from desalinization. 66% of the entire water supply of all the GCC countries, all of them, comes from desalinization plants. Again, Qatar being the extreme, with Doha getting 99% of its water from desalinization, which is, of course, extremely fuel-intensive, massive carbon footprint. Qataris have, per capita, a 7 times larger carbon footprint than even U.S. citizens per capita. That gives you an idea of the amount of energy being consumed here, where gasoline is 85 cents per gallon on average at the pump. Qataris do not pay any utilities, so imagine what their water usage and their energy usage looks like. And it's going along, and of course it's all on sea level as well, and buildings going up. You know, there's so much construction happening here that when the children here are asked to draw a skyline, all the buildings have cranes on them, even in their pictures, because they think that's just what buildings have. That's how much construction is going on here. It's really a runaway freight train of kind of, if you gave a small child unlimited resources, unlimited money, and programmed his brain with, well, hey, you know, all the excesses that corporate capitalism can provide are yours. Here's basically a black American Express credit card. Have at it. And that's basically what's happening here. So there'll be talk of, well, we need green, we need solar, we're going to plan for the future, we need renewable resources, things like this, but it's just talk. It's just there to sort of save face in the international community. But the reality is this society is just an extreme iteration of what I would argue most of the West is already doing, which is we can continue with this unbridled growth, with consuming all of these limited resources on a finite planet, going for unlimited profit growth infinitely. And it's completely collapsing all around us, and yet the train is charging over the cliff. And that's what we're seeing here as an extreme example. And, you know, another thing is that, you know, really the U.S. being gripped in this polar vortex as we speak, and yet they're just Arctic vortex as we speak. And where is the media talking about this? Where is, you know, all of the science, all of the facts that I laid out in my article, which are readily available to anyone with a computer and access to the Internet, And yet, where is the media talking about this? You know, not only is there no planning happening on a government, national, let alone a worldwide scale, but people are being led to believe that the opposite, it's going to be okay, we're going to do this. Yes, we have some solar projects planned, so we can just charge right ahead and nothing's happening, which means I think the onus is on us as individuals to make well-thought-out plans and decisions with our lives of what can I personally do to mitigate this and what do I need to do personally to take care of myself, because we're living in it now. There's no more future tense about catastrophic climate change. It's we're living in it now. Today is better than tomorrow. It's only going to keep getting increasingly intense as the future approaches. So the onus is on us, because clearly governments are not going to do what really radical measures should have been taken 10 years ago to start planning for this. They're clearly not going to make these decisions.
My final question. You just a few moments ago quoted the biologist and climatologist, Professor Emeritus Guy McPherson, who's been many times in this program, and it scares people to hear him. I mean, a lot of people won't listen when he's on. He's not radicalized his view. He simply tells it as his expertise sees it. He says, quote, "There is not much money in the end of civilization, and even less to be made in human extinction. The destruction of the planet, on the other hand, is a good bet, because there is money in this, and as long as that's the case, it's going to continue," end quote. So this goes directly to the heart of the problem that environmentalists and climate change activists warn about regarding free market capitalism's dogma of infinite growth and endless progress. And it is the ideology that has been the engine preventing treaties to be ratified to effectively reduce greenhouse gases, and even to bring this kind of discussion that we're having now into the mainstream media to educate the public. Your final thoughts on this, please.
Yes, me as a journalist particularly, it's incredibly frustrating to see the censorship in the media about this. I mean, I would liken it to the type of censorship that was going on during the lead up to the Iraq War, as well as the first couple of years of the occupation, where anyone critical of the government's decisions was basically considered a radical and someone not being patriotic, et cetera, where there is wholesale across all of the mainstream media, all of the larger international media networks, there is wholesale, basically a ban against reporting, whether it's self-censorship or top-down censorship within each media group, of really reporting on how actually severe the situation is that we find ourselves. And I think it's exactly as the reason being what you just pointed out, because look at who's financing all of these major media groups. And I would point to literally every single major media network in the West today, and where do their financial interests lie? And that's going to answer your question about why is this not being reported, because to a fault, all of them are getting funding from or are beholden to major oil and gas companies across the globe, and that's why this type of censorship is happening. So again, we're going to have to rely on radio shows like yours and certain internet, more independent internet news outlets and independent journalists to get proper information to keep us updated on what's actually happening. Because just like how governments aren't going to be taking the responsibility of going into the radical changes that need to be happening immediately to explain the situation, educate people about it, and start making the changes to prepare for what's happening, in the same way, we can't rely on the media to do that job either, given that, as you said earlier, they really are the mouthpieces of the powers that be in the government. So, you know, we have to think for ourselves. We have to seek out this information. It's all there. All the science is there. We don't have to worry about that. If we know where to look, it's easy to find. But we have to take it upon ourselves to go find this information. And you know, this is real. I think without a doubt, this is the biggest story of our lives and all future generations to come, because we're talking about possible human extinction within 30 to 40 years if we look at the hard science.
Dara, thank you very much for all your good work, for your courage, and for maintaining the highest standards of discipline to honesty first. And you certainly deserve all of your many awards in journalism. We appreciate you being on, and the book is Will to Resist, Soldiers Who Refuse to Fight in Iraq. And we will invite you back because I want to revisit Iraq, its legacy that we created, that we are now saying, and if you listened or watched any of the news programs last night, like Charlie Rose, which was an embarrassment, that whole show's an embarrassment, where they had all these, you know, Council on Foreign Relations talking heads saying, oh, you know, we should go back in there, oh, we shouldn't have left. And because look what's happening now without our guidance. Come back and let's talk for an hour on our Progressive Commentary Hour, no interruptions, on what we really created in Iraq and what's going to happen now, all right?
Sounds great, Gary. I look forward to it, and thanks again for having me.
My guest, Dar Jamail, J-A-M-A-I-L. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. But now, before you go away, we have our special of the day. We only do this occasionally. Remember, 24/7 non-commercial radio. And all the funds go for this to producing all these great programs. And we have 22 new hosts starting in the next 4 weeks. Outstanding people that I'll let you know about on tomorrow's program. So I take an item that people want, use, appreciate, and offered at a special price. Today, you're going to get something we've never done before. First, it's only going to cost you $29.95. You're going to save $135. You heard me right. The special is $29.95. The savings is $135. How's that possible? And I'll give you the number in a second to call in. First, the item is fiber stuff. There's nothing like it. We all need fiber. We all need that healthy fiber in our intestines. There are soluble fibers and there are insoluble fibers. These are derived from fruits and grains. And which ones? Well, flaxseed, of course, psyllium, rice, apple, lecithin, oat bran, rice bran solubles, probiotics, carrot, grapefruit, orange, pineapple, lemon, lime, cherry, watermelon, pear, mango, strawberry, papaya, tangerine, apricot, cranberry, guar, locust, Jerusalem artichoke, ginger, fennel, anise, and cinnamon. How about that? Nothing like that in the world. Yeah, that is what you're getting with each serving of a plus 13 grams of fiber with each serving of fiber stuff. I invented this. It's been around a long time. So that's our special. All right? Here's what you're getting as a gift. Age Busters. Now, here's what's in Age Busters. The nutrients in high doses. Wonderful. Vitamin B1 and 2 and 12 and vitamin E and calcium, magnesium and L-carnosine, 500 milligrams. Acetyl-L-carnitine, 300. Glycerol-phosphorylcholine. R-alpha-lipoic acid, 200 milligrams. Phosphatidylserine, 200 milligrams. Ginkgo biloba, 100 milligrams. Quercetin, choline bitartrate, taurine, cysteine, cayenne, benfenamine, carnitine, glutathione, inositol, blue cohosh, aspartic acid, linoleic acid, caprylic acid, pregnenolone, 20 milligrams. Siberian ginseng, rosemary. Phenomenal, phenomenal product. It's called Age Busters. And when you call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, and you get the fiber stuff at a discount, you're also getting Age Busters, a savings of $135. How about that? I've never had a special ever in my life on the air like this. That's a tremendous savings. You're only paying $29.95. You're getting a $165 package. $29.95, $165 package for $29. Call 877-627-5065. We only have about 220 fiber stuff in stock at this moment. 877-627-5065. And in the minute we have left, let me mention that we are now going to interview for just one opening for a person for the health retreat. We're full. And we thank all the people for coming as a fundraiser for BAI starting in 2 weeks. But we have work study. That's where people pay $1,000 instead of $2,000, and they do some work each day to help out, serving food and, cleaning the yoga mats, whatever it might be, something simple, but they still are able to participate in so much. They don't miss anything. And Luann Panessi's on the line now. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Yeah, I have one full-pay slot that just opened up this morning, so if someone wants to come down, these are some of the most fun, upbeat people that are going to be down there. You're looking for like-minded people. This is the place. The interviews have been going great. And, we do have the work-study slot open. So I'm at 631-504-6198. Again, 631-504-6198. And I'm going to get off the phone because I got to order that special. That's the best special I think we've ever had.
Never given a special like that in the history of my being on the air.
No.
I wanted to give to start the new year, I wanted to give something spectacular. Remember, Utrice Lee never has to raise a nickel. Danny Schechter, Richard Martin, of all the different programs, and we have 22 new programs starting with some phenomenal people I'll be announcing tomorrow. No one ever has to spend a second, and we only take a few minutes once a week or once every 2 weeks to raise money. The model works. And you ought to see the numbers. By the way, Luann, tomorrow we got a hold and also Utrice, we got a hold of the Arbitron ratings for KPFK in Los Angeles. They have total cumulative audience for a week, 106,000 listeners. That's for a week. That's only 14,000 a day. For a 75,000-watt station that's been there for over 40 years, that's got a clear channel, that's what's happening to radio that loses touch with its audience. Wait till you hear our numbers, and I'll give those tomorrow, of what happens when you connect essential information with people who don't have a political agenda but are looking for the truth. And most importantly, no one gets on Progressive Radio Network unless they can prove to our staff, our program director, Harris, that they can empower people. The shows have to empower people. They can challenge them. They can be controversial. That's fine. But at the end of it, you have to have a solution for every problem. Otherwise, you just leave people depressed. Well, we give a lot of solutions. And at least for those who are listening, they're always in solution-oriented. So that's good. So, Luann, give your number for people who want to come and join what's going to be a wonderful healing and cleansing, rejuvenation, de-stressing event.
Yes, it's 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198. Give me a call. We're going to wrap it up today.
Good. And this is today only on this special. You're saving $135. You're getting $165 for $29. 877-627-5065. Hi, what's on today, Utrice?
Hello, Gary. We're talking about Obamacare's huge gap. We're talking about bankers paying to play, and we'll be joined by Sasha Abramski, the author of The American Way of Poverty, How the Other Half Still Lives.
Sasha is a great interview. We filmed him for our Poverty Inc. film. Utrice Lee, right now, please stay on board.